John, just before we broke for lunch, as I recall, you said something about, when we were talking about metta, you spoke about how even after our parents, you mentioned parents, but other people had died, there can still be metta, and I'm thinking here, while thinking about them.
Whenever there is thinking about being, it can be object of metta.
And the being does not have to be a living being.
Why not?
Why not? Okay,
I'm confused then. So whenever there's thinking about
being,
a being, there can be metta. I may have mistakenly heard, but I thought I heard something about
can you,
even after death, after their death, there can be metta.
But can you have metta to the dead body?
No.
See, that's the being.
So it must be a living being. So any...
this plane or other plane, it doesn't matter.
This plane or other, okay. Jonathan?
It's not the question of whether it's a living being or a non-living being. It's a question of a being in any plane.
Ah.
Because there's no such thing as a non-living being, is no. there?
So it's basically metta towards what was in this plane, in this life, our parents, to whatever plane that stream of jitta is now existing.
Is there being in heaven?
That's a good question. Not the same as the being, yes.
But it's no. being.
It's a being. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So like Jonathan said earlier, it's just like when there's sharing of merit and
yes.
there's considering the benefit or the welfare of other beings or
yeah.
letting them rejoice, but it's
right.
considering other beings.
Right.
With metta, if there's kusala citta at that
yes.
moment, but not the dead corpse.
No, not the dead corpse.
Any being. So it has to be living beings.
Yes.
So
okay.
not the one that has died.
Right.
Because then it's just no,
it's
not a being.
No,
but
it's not
any
a being.
Being in any realm.
But there is another being in another realm after
so
the death.
One's thinking of
right.
a being that is alive, then it's metta.
That is alive in whatever plane.
Whatever plane, yes.
Okay.
But just it cannot be for that which is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because then it's like having metta to the tree. It's
yes.
impossible.
Same
even
thing.
If you think the tree is alive, even if yeah. you think that being is alive, actually it's just
so
like
it's,
a tree, so it cannot
yeah.
be metta.
So it's dead in this on in this plane.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like at the end of our sessions when we say, may these kusala deeds be known to our parents, friend, whatever it is, in any plane.
Just any being.
Any being, okay. Thank you, that clarifies it.
And Roti, I have a question for you. If you think you kill an insect, but actually that insect is already dead, can there be killing of that insect, even though you think it's alive?
No.
No, so it's the same kind of thing. So even though you think that it's alive and your action is the same and your citta is the same, but it can't be killing because there's no living being. So
well, there cannot be the result as...
There cannot be actual killing. So even though there might be the thought of taking life, but there's no living being, so there can't be any killing at all. It's like if I think I will kill this tablecloth, it's not, whatever thought I might have, whatever misunderstanding I might have, it can't be killing. So it's the same
well,
thing.
Well, yeah, it cannot be killing, but almost just like by name, because actually the whole... state of mind, everything is exactly the same.
It can't can't be the harming of another. So the same thing, even though you might care for the tree so much and water it and kiss it, and there can't be any metta to it, whatever wrong idea you have. And the same if it's a corpse, you might think the corpse is still a living being, and you might care for it and anoint it and think that you have lots of metta for it, but it can't be. So it's just the same kind of thing.
You probably heard, I'm sure, that if one does harm another being, or say kill another being, that the weight of that akusala deed depends on the individual that was killed, the degree of kusala or understanding of the being. So, for example, taking the life of a person who's an arahat is a much more weighty deed than taking the life of someone who isn't. And that is regardless of one's knowledge of the state of that other being's mental state. So can we say there's a kind of a parallel situation there? It's not a question just of the intention in the mind of the perpetrator, but it depends on other factors that are unknown to the perpetrator.
Yeah, so what we are saying right now is probably that it's also the object has to do with the situation, right? Not only...
Like in the case of killing, there must be the intention to harm, there must be the living being itself, and there must be death which occurs, and someone might be rushed to hospital that you've intentionally tried to kill. You may not even know whether they die or live in hospital, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
So it's the same with metta. The condition for metta is there has to be living being. So similar.
Achan,
so many factors, many conditions.
When you were responding to Anne's question just now, I'm wondering whether this is the meaning. In this kind of situation, when someone is caring for a living being who is sick and there's metta, and then the person dies. And apparently, if there is metta continuing, the person is already reborn as another being. But one could still say that the metta is towards that being, the same being, although reborn in another plane already.
Do you have metta towards Arahata, who died?
Not alive, no. Because Arahata is not...
No life.
No life, and, yeah.
But the others, as long as that person is not Arahata, you can have metta.
Metta, even though... right now we're thinking in our minds it's the image of the person of this life. He's already reborn as something else, so the metta is actually towards the new being.
The person.
Okay, so I think that answers.
So when in the metta bhavana, when it says that the object towards, that cannot be used for the development of metta, cannot be a dead person or dead being, that only applies in the case of developing metta to a certain degree.
If there is no understanding of citta with metta, can it develop?
Of course not.
Of course not. So it has to be panya, which knows the moment of metta, so it can understand whether that moment is metta or not metta. And in order to have more, it means that one sees the benefit of metta, not the dosa at all. So one knows the danger of dosa and the benefit of metta, and panya, which knows that, develop metta.
But when the texts say that that a dead person cannot be used as object, although we can see that we can still have metta for a being who had died because now he's reborn. So I take it to mean that it's only in the case where metta have to be developed to a high degree, but I'm not sure about this.
Metta is toward that person, or it's at the moment when citta is friendly?
At the moment where it's there.
Because you see that someone knows a lot about metta, but that person get angry. So is that the way to develop metta?
No.
That's why Panya has to know at that moment whether it is anger or metta. Otherwise, what can condition more metta?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is right, but I believe there's a distinction to be drawn between having metta towards someone whom you think is living in this realm now, but who in fact has passed away, and having metta towards a being that one knows has passed into another realm, so one is thinking of that being, wherever they may be, in whatever realm. Because in the first case, the target is mistaken.
When one extends merit to people, like at the end of our conversation or discussion, what citta is there?
It's metta.
Metta?
When we transfer the merit to being...
Like these crucial deeds,
yes,
and so on. Okay. At that moment, it is what? Citta. What kind of citta?
It's a...
No metta, just say it, or...
Repeating like a mantra.
Ah, when there's no real thinking or wishing.
And who knows that moment, whether it is metta or not? Mm-hmm. So only Panya, which knows, develop metta.
Okay.
Because understanding the benefit of metta towards being, no matter in what plane. What about if one's parent were born as an ant or worm?
Still being.
The citta is metta towards them. Mm-hmm. We don't know where they are now, but if they were born as worms or ants, it doesn't matter whether they know about it or not. But the citta of that person is metta towards being, not only deva or human being, also animal too.
When Queen Malika died, the Buddha didn't tell the king that she was reborn as a worm because he knew that the king would be so distressed, there would be no metta at all. So just depends on conditions. So rather than thinking of the particular one like mother or father, or with, usually with attachment or wrong understanding, better just think of any being.
So when we talked about a tree, a plant, I think usually if someone thinks that it's a being, it's just speculation. It's different than when you know that, okay, this is a being, because it has citta, it has some, we know that there's a citta in that being. So I think in the case of like considering a tree a being, it's just an idea or speculation.
When it's a dead corpse and one's washing and caring for it and taking it, but one knows that it's dead, can there be metta to that dead corpse even though one's looking after it? So it's just the same thing, different from when it's living being and one knows it's living being.
When we're watching the television, for example, we saw a lot of unhappiness of people on that. It is metta can arise? It's not, right? For what I'm
understand.
Usually just attachment and dosa. Because you know that it's not really, you know, it's just an actor, just a story.
Like a news.
It's the news, yes. Like you see the child in Australia whose house has been burnt down. And so there may be metta, usually dosa, but there can be metta, there can be compassion.
You can have metta through TV, right? Yeah.
At that moment, is the object the child's unhappiness and welfare, or is the object the TV? Is it metta to the TV?
No, I mean what you're seeing through TV, that's what I mean. So it's possible. So you can also have metta just thinking about somebody, right?
Thinking about that child that one would like to be happy, or considering their welfare can be.
Because the object of metta is already a concept, right?
What object is there?
Well, a being.
So?
A being is a concept.
It can be object of metta.
Why is there the concept of being like now? Why do we have a concept of being?
Well, because there are paramattha dhammas behind.
What kind of paramattha
dhammas? Chittas and chetasikas.
Right. So being is just shorthand, because on account of the chittas and chetasikas, there is what we call being.
Yes, but...
So when there is metta, it's actually considering the welfare of those chittas and chetasikas that we call a being.
But we are not being aware of ultimate realities. Metta can arise by being aware of concepts, that's what I mean. You are not seeing well or whatever you call it, right?
So it's thinking with kusala chittas about the well-being of that being, which
about the well-being of something you're thinking about.
Of what is being thought about,
yeah.
On account of the chittas and chetasikas. If there were no chittas and chetasikas, there couldn't be any idea of being, unless one's thinking of trees. But usually, by thinking of beings, it means there are chittas and chetasikas. So like now, one's just acting kindly. There's no thought about what are paramattha dharmas. But it's kusala chitta that just is helping at this moment. So there can be kusala chittas when there's no understanding of realities. For the person who's never heard about the Dharma, there can still be many moments of metta and dana and other kinds of kusala in the day, being friendly, considerate, compassionate, and so on. No wrong view at those moments. Even the object is beings, but no wrong view. No ignorance, no attachment at those moments. Like now I can think of Ajahn's welfare without any understanding, but there can be kusala chittas at that moment.
Well, it's still hard for me to understand how the mental state will change when the object, when the being is dead or not, even though you don't know it, but...
Ruti, it depends on the mode of thinking, not just because it has the concept of being as object of thinking, but also the kind of chitta. For example, just now we were mentioning about people in the news as against in a movie. I mean, anyone, even someone who doesn't have any understanding of Dharma, would not think about having metta towards a character in a movie, right? But if it's he saw a person in the news about somebody, there can be metta. So already there's a difference, a distinction being made there, right? Based on some, kind of perception about this being just a character and this being a real person. So likewise, how you think about a being. If you really believe that person is a being and it's true, then there can be metta. But if you think that that's being, but it's not true, then it's not metta.
That's a good point.
It's just hard to understand that why my state of mind will be different. For example, if I'm seeing a kangaroo being burned in Australia now, I see it in the news. But probably that was just fake news. It was not a real kangaroo, it was all made. But my state of mind, my tears are exactly the same. No, but yeah, I just cannot understand that part.
It's now not like movie. So the same.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I can have metta towards the people here in this movie, but not in the movie in the movies.
When a being is the object, no matter what, in movie, the same as now, whichever object is seen, but what's a person? Without citta and citta-sika, there is no person at all, no being at all. So when there is the thinking about a being, and it depends on what condition, metta or karuna, not from just the movie or even right now, exactly the same. What is the difference between seeing the movie, what's there in the movie, and what there's now?
Well, the difference is that the
being... What is the difference when you think of Snow White, Cinderella? and what about people now? You can think of the name and the story, but the reality is gone completely, no matter from movie, the screen, or this moment. So when there is the idea which condition such reality as compassion or kindness to the being, because there is the idea of thinking about that. Otherwise, there cannot be kindness or compassion. It's just right now. There must be being, even if it's not the absolute Paramattha Dhamma. But from seeing and knowing what's there, taking that which is seen as something, a living or not living, depending on thinking.
Another question came up just now. We were talking in the small room, and the other day we had been talking about that jetasikas are considered outer ayatana rather than inner ayatana. And that, to me, I can't understand it, because I can't equate a jetasika with an object, a sense object, or something like that. I can't. And the other person was saying, well, jitta is the leader of perception. I said, yes, that's true. And then I said, but the jittas and the jetasikas arise together. So whereas the jetasika kind of colors the jitta with additional informational perception. So why should the jetasika be considered an outer ayatana?
Can we simply say because it's not citta? Because it's the object of citta at that moment.
All right, so you're saying that jetasika is the object of citta?
Yes. Dosa, lobha.
Okay, but they arise together. In other words, they can't do anything without the other.
When we talk about a meeting place for a moment to arise, it needs many conditions. And depending on the aramana, pajya, or object, if it's not a characteristic of cetasika, who knows that it's not citta?
You asked where it says in the text that cetasikas are outayatanas. So this is from the Vibhanga analysis of the basis, and also the the analysis of the basis on ayatanas in the Vibhanga, the second book of the Abhidharma, and it actually has the same in the Visuddhimagga, which is a commentary, but this is the Abhidharma text. Therein, what is dhammayatana, the khanda of feeling, the khanda of vedana, the khanda of sanya, the khanda of sankhara, dhammas, and that invisible non-impingement material quality, i.e. subtle rupas, and the unconditioned element, i.e. nibbana. Okay, I have the Pali here too. What is Dhamma Ayatana, Vedana Kanda, Sanya Kanda, Sankara Kanda, those rupas which are subtle, they're Dhamma Ayatana, and also the unconditioned element. So any chetasika is dhammayatana whenever it appears or whenever it arises.
So citta is not dhammayatana, but dhammarana, dhammaramana.
So if we're talking about the ayatanas, I sense is in ayatana, visible object is out ayatana, ear sense, nose sense, taste sense, tangible base are all in ayatanas, and their objects are all outer ayatanas, as Ajahn said, this inner sense and the object. And when it comes to manayatana, the inner ayatana, this includes any citta which is arising now, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, bhavanga citta, any citta at all. And the dhammayatana are any other realities, any citta seekers. When they are experienced or when they arise, any subtle rupas and nibbana. Actually, the same dharmas that are classified when we talk about dhatus, elements, the same elements that are dharma dhatu, subtle rupas, chetasikas, and nibbana. But when we're talking about dharma ramana, it is referring to any objects which cannot experience through the sense doors. So in this case, it includes chetasikas, because they can't be included through the sense doors, subtle rupas, any subtle rupas, any concepts, any chittas can only be experienced through the mind door. So dhammayatana includes all chittas also, and nibbana. So different. But sometimes in the dictionaries, they kind of suggest that they are the same, but quite different. So this is why there's confusion.
I have a question about the object of metta. As we say that it should be living beings. And so if it is a concept, and if the one who is enlightened see things not as things, but they know actually what the reality is there. So if it is just the rupa or nama, is there any metta? Can be any metta there then?
When you get angry, with the eyes or ears, or seeing, or hearing, or a being?
Angry must be with a subject, an object, something.
When there's the idea of someone or something is there as object.
Yes, yes.
So that's why the Brahma Vihara has the being, living being, as the object.
Yes.
And with our seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and rupa, there cannot be any being at all.
Yes.
But when it's a whole as someone, it conditions the metta or karuna, mudita or upekha.
Yes. But I just suppose if one sees things not as a being, then
And when you understand that without Paramattha Dhamma, there cannot be any being, living being at all, right? So,
yes.
Exactly at that moment of thinking about eyes and ears, do you have metta? Or when you think of a person with seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, rupa?
Rupa? You mean rupa?
Included, because all beings, no matter five khandhas or four khandhas or one khandha.
Does the enlightened person have the concept of a being?
No, I think no.
Why not?
Because an enlightened person sees reality as it is.
If a Sotapanna was sitting in the room here, would he or she not have a concept of people?
So you mean that it is actually momentary reality, that metta just arises at the moment of seeing reality as the beings, as the concept, that metta still arises?
Partly yes, but I'm just trying to ask you to consider, if the enlightened being was sitting where you are, would he or she see the same thing or something different? Or how would the world appear?
Depends on the moment, isn't it?
Are you saying that some moments there'd be people and at other moments no people? How would the world appear at those moments when the person wasn't seeing or having a concept of room and people and things? If that enlightened being was listening, would that enlightened being hear words spoken, or would there be gaps in the sentence when there was some other object, or what?
Could an enlightened person think about Ajahn's welfare or help Nina and think about what is useful for Nina at this moment?
Yes.
So at those moments of thinking of Nina's welfare or helping Ajahn, what is the object of that kind of thinking?
Beings, humans, yes.
At those moments of helping or considering their needs, is there any wrong understanding?
So you mean that they still see the world as it is?
Just as it, like now.
Just understanding.
Like at the moment of helping Nina with her stick, with, let's say it's with metta, there cannot be any wrong view or akusala, because we're talking about kusala cittas. So just like now, so life carries on as normal, but no, after that moment of metta, no wrong understanding that in reality there is a Nina or a being, no confusion at all. Not this kind of question at all.
So what I understand is, it is all the moments that matter. So if at the moment to help people, it is, you know, still as the normal world, but they can see other moments, the reality just as it is, there is no wrong
view. I think it's just like now, because if we were to have metta now, it'd be only the moments of the kusala jittas, right? Moments of seeing and hearing, there wouldn't be any metta. Just the moments of kusala jittas in the process, in the mind door process.
Yeah.
So all the other moments, no metta, actually.
In between moments of right understanding of dharmas, like after those moments of metta, there can be right understanding instantly that understands that characteristic of metta as reality, or any reality that is appearing. So the difference is in the understanding, but it doesn't mean there isn't still kindness and generosity without understanding, just thinking of other beings.
The understanding moment is afterwards, or like at the same time.
There can be, how can the characteristic of metta be known? This is a good question for you and Gung. How can there be understanding of the Paramattha Dhamma of metta? because at that moment of metta, when it arises, the object is other beings. This was actually like something you asked about on, we discussed on the list. So how can metta be known? How can the reality of metta be known?
Thinking about it, considering about it.
I would like to bring the subject back, like Ajahn always does. It's a so good reminder that it is now and that we have to consider more, even when we ask about metta, the ajitas, and consider that it is not a self and a reality, a dhamma that asks is a loba or is the chanda, like we discussed this morning. It's so good to understand better the reality at this moment. Like at lunchtime, Ajahn reminded me that there is Kanika Marana and Samuti Marana. So this is a reminder that there is only one moment, Kanika Marana, not the situation, not a concept of this situation or that situation, but Kanika Marana, just this moment. I find it so helpful as a reminder. And Ajahn said, well, when it is considered more, it can be a support to slowly more, to have more understanding, even leading to direct understanding.
So whatever we're talking about, like metta or anything else, it's a reality and it has a characteristic which can be known even now when it appears. So at that moment of metta, beings are the object, but immediately afterwards, the reality itself can be known directly when there is understanding, even now. Different moment.
For the enlightened being, the mind works in the same ways for us, so seeing, hearing, and a lot of thinking following each mode of seeing. And that thinking creates a concept of people and things in the world and a room, people and objects. And for the enlightened being, it's the same. But for us, because of accumulated wrong view, which arises from time to time, but also, as we've heard, is one of the asavas that is there in a subtle form all the time, the mere concept of people and things, which is based on experiences of rupas, comes along with a certain idea of reality as being those people and things. Whereas for the enlightened being, that's all been eradicated. So although the concepts are formed, there is no taking the concept for being in a reality. But otherwise, the enlightened being doesn't have to reconstruct realities into people and things.
I think that reminded me about the question on the list about jhana and metta. Or in jhana, the object would be not a being or not a sense object. Was it that? I think so. But it seems like, again, speculation, because Ajahn said to me, it all has to be very natural. So when we think now about jhana, there is no jhana now, and I don't know about jhana. So it's better to talk about this moment.
I think the question you wanted to ask Jan before, as you said, was she thinks that when it is metta as jhana, then beings can't be the object. That was
about extending metta to all beings, as I understood, only in jhana. But that was a misunderstanding, I think.
How come metta to be at level of samatha?
It is an object of samatha, I have learned that.
If it's not developed, can it be that level of samatha?
If it is not developed, it cannot be.
That's why we understand, we don't mistake that moment for jhana. Yes. It's different from jhana paccaya.
Yes.
So we have to learn very carefully the difference.
Yes.
When we talk about jhana, what do we mean? Jhana?
I'm thinking of how it is described in the Visuddhimagga, very slowly.
But if you don't talk about Visuddhimagga, about reality.
So about reality, I really don't know how to develop it.
If there is no object of metta at all, can it reach that level of jhana, which has metta as the object?
Not yet. It could not be if it is not developed.
That's why from now. And then one knows that how hard to get there, to have metta towards everyone in the world.
Even now.
Not only one world.
Yes.
That's why Panya knows that. That's why even samatha cannot develop without metta, without Panya.
Without Panya, yes.
So when samatha develops with metta as object, how is that samatha, how is that calm developed with metta as object?
We have no idea, really.
Yeah. We've said, like we mentioned to Thay, when we talk about development, we're talking about panya, so it has to be understanding, otherwise nothing can be developed. And so if it is development of understanding with metta as the object, how can there be more understanding of that, of the nature of metta, and what metta is, and what the object of metta is?
When it appears.
When it appears, right. So after metta has arisen and experiences other beings with loving kindness, then that reality can be, that metta can be known. If there's no understanding of when there is metta and when there is not metta, then it can't develop at all. So some people have a lot of metta naturally in a day. We know some people are naturally very kind, but if there's no understanding, it arises by accumulations. But it doesn't develop because there isn't actually the understanding of what is metta and when it arises. So just having kindness and goodness without understanding is not enough. It just arises because it's one's habit or tendency, but it doesn't actually develop.
Would it be like the nimitta of metta? When you say that metta is the object in the development of samatha at a higher level, it should be some kind of nimitta, right? So is it like nimitta of metta?
In what sense are you using nimitta there?
In the sense of the development of samatha, in samatha, like patika nimitta.
When you say the nimitta of metta, what do you mean?
I don't know the nimitta, but just in the case of the breath, it mentioned about the nimitta of the breath, so there should be something similar.
It's just referring to particular objects. So when we're talking about, for example, reflection on death or metta, which involves thinking about in many ways, and it doesn't, we're not referring to that kind of nimitta of the object, like of kasina or breath.
Mm-hmm. Okay, okay. Then what is the object then?
Well, as we've said before, understanding understands about the kusala citta, knows kusala from agusala, and also knows the conditions for that kusala to arise. It's not the same as the understanding that knows the characteristic of a reality, but it knows about kusala states of different kinds.
But at the moment of...
And the value, say the value of metta, the benefit of metta.
Knows when metta arises, what metta is, but if it's not the understanding of reality, it's still my metta.
Yes, that is the, I guess that is the beginning, well, I mean the the basis, the foundation, but at the moment of jhana, then what is the object?
If there's no thinking, can there be being?
No.
So, do you always think of someone?
Do
you think of someone?
Yes.
In a day?
Lot.
What citta is there at that moment?
Most of the time akusala, but sometimes...
So it's not metta. But when it's metta, you learn to understand the characteristic of metta at moment of thinking about the other's being. Is there a shape and form of that person in your thought? When you think of, for example, Jonathan.
It's the idea of Jonathan.
Only the name. But everything that you know about that word as a being, right? Not the other being, but this particular one. And what citta at that moment of thinking about him or anyone.
So it can be kusala or akusala most of the time.
Instead of that, can there be metta?
Yes.
And when it develops and grows, when there's more and more understanding of that metta, and it grows and grows greater and greater to that level, then it's more and more, it's deeper and deeper.
And usually it's attachment or aversion, right? But it's just the name, and you think of people or being. It's not like when you see that person personally, see? So metta, at that moment of seeing someone, not just thinking, because when we think, usually it's always with attachment or aversion, right? Because metta is not strong enough. So metta is that sit down in dark room and then think about people try to have metta. But it's moment of seeing that person, confronting that person, whether metta is there and it develops more or less or not at all. So the development of metta is that which has to be by understanding. If there is no understanding at all, the citta at that moment cannot be kusala of metta.
I think that's a very good point, that when we meet the persons, it's more likely to be metta, and when we think, just think about someone, it's more likely to be akusala. That makes sense.
Just to clarify, we're talking about the development of metta, right? Before Sarah talking about the metta appear and with understanding.
Okay, there are two kinds of bhavana or mental development. What are the two kinds of bhavana?
Bhavana
like we. Yeah. So usually we're talking about the understanding of realities, because this is the whole purpose of the Buddha's path, and this is the only way that leads to the eradication of kilesa. So what is unique to the Buddha is the vipassana bhavana, the development of understanding of realities, which leads to enlightenment. But before the Buddha's time, and also as taught about the Buddha, we read about samatha bhavana, which is the development of calm. So when we're talking about the development of calm, we talk about certain objects such as metta that can be the object of samatha bhavana. So now, like Ajahn's saying, is there metta at this moment? When talking to our friends right now, is there metta? Is there any understanding of which cittas are calm? Does one really see the value of
being detached from sense objects. Because if there's no understanding of what metta is, then it won't be an object of any kind of understanding. If we're talking about the understanding of realities and metta is the object rather than hardness or seeing, it's that reality which is Dhamma, not self, which is the object. If we're talking about metta, which is the object of samatha bhavana, like Nina asked about jhana with metta as object, and so did Tam, in that case, there has to be the understanding of exactly when metta arises and what its nature is, but not as Dhamma. So the not at that moment, but other moments, it can still be my metta or my development. But it's still the understanding of metta when it appears.
So the development mentioned about for the development of the understanding, not about the development of metta, right? Development of the understanding, metta just the object like others.
Like now, there are just different paramattha dhammas arising and falling away. Whether right now there is thinking about beings or there are moments of seeing or hearing, in fact, only paramattha dhammas are arising and falling away. But even if there is a lot of understanding, there is an understanding of reality at every moment of kusala. There may just be occasional moments, but there can be other kinds of kusala arising too. Moments of generosity, moments of metta. And at those moments, the object of those cittas is concept, not paramattha dhamma. And if there is more understanding of metta and its nature, then there can be more calmness in a day with that object, considering that object wisely, not by any trying or anything, but just naturally, moments of reflection on metta, moments of reflection on death, just naturally. In this case, we're not talking about the understanding of realities, but still is wise kusala reflection, yoniso manisikara, not ayoniso manisikara. So just different kinds of kusala.
Can I say with the understanding is support for metta to be arise?
Yes,
okay.
Because with more understanding there is more truthfulness, less delusion about what metta is. One doesn't say, I helped my mother for half an hour and so I had half an hour of metta. One knows how occasional and precious and wholesome those moments of metta are. One understands the value more. So understanding is the support for all kinds of kusala, because of understanding the value and being more truthful about when it arises.
Just picking up on your comment that it's the understanding of metta. I think that's correct, because in the various samatha objects or subjects of contemplation, say the earth element or death, it's contemplating in a wholesome way about death or about the earth element. And in the case of metta, it must be also contemplating about metta, although that couldn't be done unless metta was also arising and being developed at the same time. But in essence, I think it's correct to say that what conditions the jhana citta is the level of understanding about metta.
Like a song along the same line, talking about the arupa jhanas, we know that like the higher arupa jhanas have the previous citta of the lower level of jhana as object. So, of course, the citta must have fallen away. So what is the object? It's actually the nibbita of that citta, right?
Of that reality. The second and fourth have the nibbita of the reality of the first and third. All the other jhanas have concept as object. I have a question here from Alan, different topic. We can come back to this later, but just to give it a little break. This is for Ajahn from Alan Weller in England. I know we have discussed this before, but I would like your view on this issue in schools, if possible. Below is a quote from a report to the government in England about the benefits of secular mindfulness without the Buddha's teachings in schools. Quote, methods for training mindfulness have long been central to the contemplative traditions of Asia, especially Buddhism. Using these methods but freeing them from any religious or dogmatic content. The below are quotes from the teaching standards which are required by law for all UK schools, all schools in England. Quote, establish a safe and stimulating environment for pupils rooted in mutual respect, having regard for the need to safeguard pupils' well-being in accordance with statutory provisions. My question, does this mindfulness without the Buddhist teachings compromise or possibly compromise the health and safety of children?
Does it give any understanding of samatha, tranquility or calm?
Does what? Does the question or the...
The quote.
The quote. The idea behind it.
What is the idea or motive?
The misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Because you see that people use the conventional word without understand reality at all. When it's pleasant, they think that it's calm. So what they just want is pleasant things, pleasant moment, pleasant feeling. But they don't know what is that and what is conditioned for that kind of reality.
I think everyone here knows that the idea is wrong, like the idea of mindfulness, which is common throughout the world and taught in companies and taught in schools. And they say originally it comes from Buddhism, but they take out the words Buddhism and they say it's not religious. And they think wrongly that it's of some use. And they have guidelines for the teaching, for teachers, that there must be mutual respect and there must be safeguarding of the students' well-being. So his question is, when there is this kind of teaching in the schools, is it hurting or harming the well-being of students?
Of the teachings.
Of the teachings. Mm-hmm. So the concern is really the harm to the teachings, especially if they refer to the Buddha's teaching or they say originally it was. How about if they, because now the trend, like it mentions here in the school, is they don't mention Buddhism, they just teach this method and they don't call it anything, they just say this is mindfulness practice. Does it hurt the Buddha's teachings?
That is conventional idea only.
Just conventional mm-hmm. idea. So then if they don't mention Buddha's teachings, it doesn't hurt it. It's just conventional
because,
idea.
The word Buddha means understanding,
yes,
knowing, enlightening.
So if they don't mention the Buddha's teachings and they just encourage the children to close their eyes and be mindful, we can't say it's hurting the teachings because they're not calling it the Buddha's
when
teachings.
When it's not true, it conditioned wrong idea and wrong practice.
Wrong ideas.
And also wrong speech and deeds. Like they say, this is the teachings.
So we can say in that sense that it harms the students that are taught, but we can say a lot of other wrong teachings in schools, teaching of other religious ideas as being true, also in that sense, because when people don't have right understanding, it has to be like that.
Without understanding, what is the result of the kind of practice?
Just more wrong understanding and attachment.
And think that it's right.
Think it's right. But isn't that just the same when children are taught other kinds of religions, or even when they're taught science and taught that science is the explanation of the way things are? So I think that that's the way that the world is, because there's so little understanding. It's bound to be the teaching of wrong view and attachment, no matter what is taught. Is this any worse than any other kind of teaching?
For those who'd like to understand the truth.
The problem there is, though, that they're children. They are children. And whether they want to understand the truth, they I would think the majority haven't even thought about it.
So they have wrong understanding from...
Yes.
...through.
Yes. They do.
And even adults, I don't think they're particularly interested in understanding the truth. They just want to relax or something like that, right?
Even in our hotel, they have mindfulness meditation 3 days a week. So it's anywhere, yes. Because people would like to just sit quietly and relax, and so it's common.
And what is the result? And sometimes one goes crazy.
I'm sorry, John, what did you say? Sometimes?
Not always. It depends on accumulation.
If one thinks it's the right way and the right path, and then one thinks one should do it more and more and more and more, then it can lead to that result.
I think Ajahn says that one can go crazy because of the mental states that arise, right? With concentration or with wrong concentration.
And it's not just there, anywhere in the world. Yeah.
No, I just heard about the wrong concentration. I'm just curious about it. Concentrations arise every time with citta, right? So
when it's akusala citta, then concentration is there. And when it's akusala citta with wrong understanding, what kind of concentration is there at that moment?
You can say wrong concentration.
Wrong concentration, okay. Wrong everything. Wrong thinking, wrong everything.
But is this more danger than whatever arises now? After the moment of seeing many attachment there, many lobha there, right? So it also the wrong concentration, but it's not like very strong level. Or what is the differences between that and? But and Ajahn always impressed that it the wrong concentration either lead to very wrong, or what is the difference? Is that daily life like this?
Now we're having a Dharma discussion and we're learning more about Dharmas. But while we're having this discussion about Dharmas, like Ajahn said before, the asava ditti, it arises so commonly. So many moments of wrong understanding in between moments of right understanding, like even moments of, like yesterday, trying to catch the dosa, or we were talking about chanda with lobha, trying to understand chanda, moments of wrong understanding that can condition wrong practice at any time, but in between. But if one has the idea that closing one's eyes and focusing on the breath, for example, or focusing on loving kindness is the right way, and one has the idea the more of that kind of focusing, the better. So one just focuses more and more and more on what one thinks is metta and cuts contact with one's family or just wants to live in a remote temple, just focusing on metta, then it can become quite dangerous. One can go quite mad, just cutting off contact from other people, being so disturbed by any noises, thinking there shouldn't be any electronics anywhere, just wanting to focus, maybe not even eating or drinking, not wanting to waste time. So wrong concentration, if it's followed, this is the wrong path and it leads in the wrong direction. So most children, when they're, or most people in the hotel who just sit quietly and relax, they're just sitting quietly and relax and just attachment, pleasant feeling. But for the one who really thinks it's away and focuses more and more on the wrong object, then it's dangerous.
So the point is not about the wrong concentration. The point is about the wrong understanding, right?
The wrong understanding and the wrong concentration, because that concentration can be very strong.
Very strong.
Focusing okay. Very strongly on the object.
Okay. Because, okay.
Are they really relaxed? And they really relax.
They think it's calmness and relaxation, but actually, all those moments, the cheetah is very agitated. No equanimity, no tatramajatata at those moments at all.
And uncontrollable. It cannot be like one wishes.
Yeah, and also, it would be like. Starting with at a young age, it would encourage them to go to meditation center where, when they grow up. So I don't think it would encourage to. I don't think this is a way to encourage children to understand the Dhamma at all, but the opposite.
I think there are two issues here. One is everyone agrees it's not the right way, it's not the right teaching, it's common all over the world, it's not actually of value for children at all because there's no right understanding, and not only is it not of value, it may be harmful for them if they get the wrong idea and pursue it. The other point, though, to consider is when we read and hear about this, because like this friend has brought this up many, many times. So when we hear about these kinds of practices in schools and universities and workplaces, on the beach, even at our beach in Australia, they have morning mindfulness sessions now, or in the hotel, is one concerned or is one bothered? Or is one disturbed, or is there equanimity at those moments? So that's another point, because it comes back to the cheetah now when we read or hear about these things. Like if one hears in Thailand about the behavior of some monks, or about the wrong views, or the different practices, we know it's not right or the way to go, but what about one's own cheetah now when one hears about these things? Is there any disturbance or is there metta?
I have a question about fantasy world, like seeing in here Achans and friends and flower and so on. The creation of this fantasy world is ignorance, but can you explain more?
About
the creation of the fantasy world.
Right now, when there is no understanding of the absolute truth, Dhamma. Now, it's now fantasy.
But Thay, is having the concept of a person a fantasy, or is it based on certain experiences, the experiencing of certain Dhammas?
No, I just mean about the world concept.
but the concept of based on certain experiences, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Different from a fantasy in the sense of seeing things that aren't there, for example. We were discussing earlier how for the enlightened being there will still be concept of people and things.
Yes.
There'll still be a table and a microphone in a room. Is that also then a fantasy?
For the arahants, no.
Well, even for the sotapanna?
No.
So does it have to be a fantasy for the non-sotapanna?
No. Again, your question.
Well, if it's not a fantasy for the sotapanna, does it have to be a fantasy for us now?
I think yes, because of attachment. Because of attachment to that. And
does there have to be attachment now? Can there be moments without attachment?
Right. There can be attachment, can be not.
Right. Because not all moments are a gusala in a day. I'm just getting to the idea of, is it really necessarily a fantasy that there is the concept of a table and a person?
Yeah, I see.
For the sotapanna, lost in thought like now, but so fantasies, but not fantasies with wrong view, that's the difference.
Yes, because the
lots
reason
of proliferation, but only proliferation with loba or mana, but not with ditti, yes.
The reason, because it appears all the time, it's just right after the seeing, then see the people, see everything. And
so can we say, like enlightened person, also thinking about the concept, but without the wrong idea that self thinking, something like that. Still thinking about the concept. Not
what about like at lunchtime when one's just dreaming about different kinds of food and just having fun and enjoying oneself? Maybe no wrong view arising, but just lost in daydreams and fantasies, just common.
From what you're explaining, so it's the difference is for the sotapanna, that is no any wrong view about the people and think that it's a real.
Can still be dreaming and talk chattering about the different food items and the different tastes and whatever, just lots of papancha, lots of fantasy, but without any wrong view. Whereas for us, when we're chattering and thinking about the food, there may be moments
hidden
of
wrong view.
Hidden wrong view, yes. Dittasava, completely unknown after seeing and hearing.
It's not now so very fantasy, just now. Permanent things.
You just mentioned papancha. What is the difference between papancha and manyati?
So I think what we're talking about now is papancha and manyati. So papancha refers to any kind of attachment, mana or ditti, so that's why I mentioned sotapanna still has lots of papancha. Actually it's proliferation, but it's like fantasy, but not with ditti. And the manyati, I think, refers to that thinking about those objects with attachment and mana and ditti, so very close in meaning. I think manyati is the verb and papancha is the noun, but very close. The way that the commentary refers to them, like in the Mula Pariyaya Sutta and Bhikkhu Bodhi's introduction, they're very close.
Ajahn, when we say there is now is a fantasy, whereas it's not a fantasy for the sotapanna.
No, so I mean that when there is the understanding of what is there now, the truth of this moment.
So the difference is the understanding.
Mm-hmm. Actually, there's no one at all, but the fantasy world full of everything like now, people and things.
But the sotapanna will still have a concept also of people and things, mm-hmm. but not the wrong understanding about them.
So what conditions the fantasy?
Realities and wrong view?
Thinking.
At the moment of metta for other beings, ha, is there any fantasy at that moment?
I think it depends when it is with an enlightened person.
When there is a moment of metta, the moment of metta, is there any fantasy?
You mean the moment?
At the moment of metta.
I think yes.
As I'm the one who started using the word fantasy, no. Because metta is kusala citta, so even though the object are other beings, there's no illusion, no mirage, no wrong understanding, not even any attachment at that moment. So at moments of kusala, there's no fantasy at all. The fantasy comes afterwards. Like at a moment of any kind of understanding, no fantasy, but afterwards, instantly dreaming about what's been seen and heard and what one would like for supper, how long one's journey will take. This is the fantasy world, living in the world of concepts, but not understanding that they are just concepts, ideas, mirages, not realities.
So if it's the moment of kusala citta, then there is understanding there, so there is no
awareness
fantasy.
At that moment, there's no attachment, no ignorance. When there's fantasy, there's ignorance.
And we say that the world of concept is the world of fantasy.
I'm sorry, but I still don't understand, because the object of metta is a concept, so you're saying that the world of fantasy is when we live in the world of concepts.
Living in the world of concepts with ignorance and attachment, not even realizing that we're lost in the world of concepts, like at lunchtime when we're just enjoying all the different tastes and thinking about different things, lost in the world of concepts without any understanding that thinking is real, but the concepts are not real.
But when we have metta, we are also not thinking if either the concept is real or not.
But there's no illusion, there's no misunderstanding, there's no taking the concepts for being real, there's no ignorance at that moment. But immediately afterwards, like at the moment of metta, no ignorance, but immediately afterwards, there can be thinking long stories about the color of someone's shirt or what they're doing or what they're wearing, and then lost in the world of concepts with ignorance. No kusala of any kind.
Can we say that everyone lives in a world that includes concepts, but for the enlightened being, because of the developed understanding and lack of wrong view, there's no fantasy aspect to the concepts, whereas for the unenlightened being there is a fantasy aspect, but of course at moment of kusala presumably not so.
As long as reality does not appear to panya as it is, it's fantasy.
Right, but metta can be experienced by non-enlightened beings, right?
Is that a being or just a moment of citta arising and falling away? That is not fantasy, it's true. But as long as it does appear as it is, it's still the world of concept, of fantasy.
And I'm not sure if it's related to this, but it sounds like I've not really understood that in one of your talks, Thai talks, you mentioned thale chu thale phap. Is this the fantasy you're referring to that's conditioned by ignorance? So it comes down to thinking with ignorance. That's fantasy, isn't it?
Can we say, as long as reality does not appear as it is to panya, it's fantasy? Because it takes the citta as permanent, like seeing now. While in reality, it just arises and falls away in split seconds.
Asked what's seen, and we say, I see this person. That's evidence of fantasy, because in reality, what's seen is visible object.
Because the arising and falling way of seeing does not appear yet. So there is people and thing and all fantasy world. But when reality appears, it's not a fantasy at all. Because it's so real, it's there, no one there, no thing there. So how can it be fantasy?
The fantasy is the lack of seeing realities as they are, rather than the idea of a table and a room, though.
Because
is that right?
It brings about fantasy world.
Having metta, which realities you're seeing as they are?
Fantasy as I have metta, and metta does not fall away.
After the metta, there's the idea it's my metta and I don't have, and it's something that lasts, then that's fantasy.
But that, in that case, that will apply also to akusala, like after the anger, then you have the idea of a person or something.
So more and more fantasy.
But we could say that the moment of anger, I don't know what's the difference between the moment of anger and the moment of metta in the sense of not being a fantasy.
It's the tree fantasy. It's the flowers here fantasy.
Yes.
Because not knowing the truth that actually they've gone, everything which appears, never to arise again. But it's still there in the fantasy world, thinking about it as different things and events, happenings.
But also the being that it's that I'm having metta for.
No matter what, as long as reality does not appear as it is, nothing can destroy the fantasy idea.
As Jonathan was just saying, it's not so much the thinking, the concept, but the fact that there is no understanding in between. So even when if you're having a lot of metta and less akusala, if there's no in between, there's no understanding of reality as they are, then it's still fantasy. So, and as Achan was saying, the moments out of fantasy, the brief moments out of fantasy is the moment of Satipatthana, when it's like an island.
It's just
in the middle
like
of the ocean.
So, Sarah was saying right now that at a moment of metta, there is no fantasy.
There are different, we can take it to different levels, different, in the ultimate sense, even those kinds of kusala, even samatha bhavana, even though it's very great samatha, even moments of jhana are considered as the wrong path because they're not the moments of understanding and they're not leading in the right way. So in this sense, one could say that in the ultimate sense, any moments that are not moments of understanding of reality are fantasy. So a jhana is running with...
It's a particular meaning of fantasy.
Yes, running with
not in
my
accordance
word
with reality.
Fantasy and just taking it to in the deepest sense. So even samatha bhavana, even moments of jhana, is a wrong path in the deepest sense. So it depends how deeply one considers it.
Mad and insane, more fantasy.
One of the meanings of fantasy is having ideas about things that there's no basis for. But when we talk about flowers, we're all fantasizing about the same thing, so there must be some basis for the idea of flowers to arise. Otherwise, we wouldn't all have the same idea that there's a bowl of flowers there. In a sense, it can also be regarded as a fantasy.
The way I was understanding fantasy was like taking experience for people and things, right?
That's one meaning.
That's the one.
And then a deeper meaning is not just when there is wrong understanding, but even when there is attachment, dreaming about different things. But then a deeper meaning is whenever there is no understanding of reality as it is. And an even deeper meaning is because everything arises and falls away and actually is unreal in that sense. Compared to Nibbana, that's even deeper. So it depends how it's used.
We are here, not in the mental hospital. Right? So it begins to understand what's meant by fantasy, different degrees. So we can say that as long as it's not the vipassana, the moment of penetrate the truth of reality right now as it is, as no one at all, only that which arises and falls away. If it's not known yet, the fantasy of what is there, me or...
So then it also includes moments of understanding of at the level of pariyatti or satipatthana, because it's not the clear knowing of vipassana jnana. So it can be taken deeper and deeper.
So what was your meaning when you were saying that at the moment of metta there is no fantasy then?
Because when I was using it, when I've been using it, I've been saying that I've been using it to refer to moments when there are papancha, like as a synonym for papancha, when there's just thinking with attachment and ignorance and wrong view and conceit. So at a moment of metta, the object of other beings, but there's no attachment, there's no wrong view, there's no ignorance, there's no delusion, there's no ignorance at that moment, no ignorance of any kind. So that's how I've been using it. But Ajahn is using the same term, but taking it deeper to refer to any moments that can be considered as the wrong path, any moments when there's not direct understanding of reality, and actually even deeper, just referring to moments of vipassana jnana when there is clear understanding that dharmas arise and fall away, no one there at all. So actually she's referring to like fourth stage of vipassana jnana, when there's the understanding of arising and falling away. So they're just different degrees and levels. So use it however you like.
Can we say that those who do not have the understanding of what is wholesome and what is unwholesome, can we say that it's a degree of fantasy? And for those who know what's what, another degree. Until when reality appears at that moment, it's not fantasy at all. It's real, so true, it's the truth.
So the fantasy world is less beautiful for the people to have a little understanding. The fantasy world is not as beautiful as, when the people who had a little understanding, the fantasy world is less beautiful.
What is beautiful? What is beauty? Is the wrong idea beautiful, or is the understanding beautiful?
Not understanding, take it as beautiful.
Not understanding cannot be beautiful.
Excuse me?
Not understanding cannot be beautiful.
Right. So the idea of me, the idea of peoples and things is deeply rooted, and
so it's deeply.
And it, because of the wrong views, and
so it looks so beautiful with wrong understanding, right? But yes. When there is understanding, it's so much more beautiful than anything else, just to understand the truth. And when it's the moment of realization, penetration, so beautiful.
Those that have directly experienced Nibbana might say even the Vipassana Jnana understanding is fantasy, because compared to Nibbana, anything else arises and falls away and is worthless. So layers and layers.
What is beautiful for a worm?
The leaf.
I've got a question from Azita, and I think it's a good time because she said she was listening on in the afternoon. Hi, Azita. This is a verse from Sutta Nipata, and it's a little bit linked to this discussion. The world is shrouded by ignorance, Ajita, said the Blessed One. It does not shine because of avarice and heedlessness, because of greed and heedlessness. I say that hankering is its adhesive. Suffering is its greatest peril. Her question is, what is the meaning of shine in this instance? When it says, in the beginning it said, the world is shrouded, covered by ignorance. It does not shine because of avarice and heedlessness, because of greed and lack of awareness.
Because of no light.
Yes, no light of understanding, because it's covered up by ignorance. Yes, I said.
Shine here in the sense the moon shines, so it's light.
When there's understanding, it illuminates it.
Then one can see the beauty of truth.
The illumination of truth.
It's beautiful in thinking. It's beautiful in thinking now.
It's much more beautiful when it's realized.
I have a question about Bhavangachitta. Why the object of Bhavangachitta is something related to the previous life, but not this life or the other life?
The object of the Patisandhi, the Bhavangachittas, and the Chuttichitta in this life is the same object that was experienced by the last Javana Chittas just before death in the last life, any object at all. So like, as Ajahn said the other day, death could come now. So if death came now, whatever is the object of seeing or thinking now would be the object of the rebirth consciousness and these Bhavangachittas in the next life. It's the unknown object, because Bhavangachittas don't experience the object through an eye door or mind door process, so it can't be known. It's completely unknown, and it doesn't matter what it is. Is that the point?
Tai just mentioned about beautiful. So for us, when we say that something is beautiful, I think it's most likely to be with attachment. So for enlightened beings, I suppose that they still see that this is beautiful and this is not beautiful according to the like the general middleman idea. But what is the difference when they...
Are you aware, familiar with, I shouldn't use the word aware, are you familiar with the four vipalasas, the perversions, the distorted ways of thinking, Tai?
Sorry, I don't know.
So
what do you mean?
We read about the four kinds of perversion or distorted way of thinking. So for ordinary people like us, we take that which is impermanent for being permanent. We think the seeing lasts. We think the hardness touched lasts. So what is actually impermanent is taken for being permanent. This is one. And the second is that which is in truth anatta,
we take for being something or someone. So the Sotapanna no longer has these kinds of perversions. There's no longer any idea or thinking about taking that which is permanent for impermanent or that which is not self for self. But still the other two kinds of perversions, one is taking that which is dukkha, that which is unsatisfactory for being satisfactory. The feeling when eating lunch, the pleasant feeling, is taken for being satisfactory, but actually, because it's impermanent and rises and falls away, it's not satisfactory at all. It's completely useless. Even the panya now, it seems to be very satisfactory, and we all dream about having more panya, but the panya now, it arises, it falls away, it's not in anyone's control, it can't be made to arise. So it's dukkha, it's not satisfactory. And the other one is beautiful. So what we take for being beautiful, like the color, for example, is actually foul. Whatever arises and falls away, whatever is unsatisfactory, is actually foul. So for the arahat, no more vipalasa whatsoever, no more illusion that what is really foul, actually no more thought that it's beautiful, no more idea that what is dukkha is sukha. But still they will know conventionally that most people consider this flower as beautiful, or they understand how everyone thinks, but for them, no illusion that there's anything beautiful that's seen or heard or experienced in life at all.
I guess that we should try to have good food many times before that we cannot see good food.
We have countless times for that.
We don't have to have extra lobha just to make up for when there will be no lobha. Even the chili taste in reality is foul and unsatisfactory because it's impermanent and anatta.
What is the Pali word for the last vipalasa? It's
soba and asoba.
Asoba and soba. So although it's this world with people and things, but it appears in a totally different way than it appears to us.
Like when we're talking about fantasies, layers and layers and layers. So compared to all the akusala states, the kusala states are very beautiful, and compared to different kinds of kusala with understanding is far more beautiful. But in the ultimate sense, whatever is conditioned is foul.
Ajahn, we've spoken about the two kinds of dukkha. Dukkha, the bodily and mental pain, to make it brief, and the second kind of dukkha.
Mental as well.
Yes, bodily and mental pain. And the second kind of dukkha, the arising and falling away of
that is the sankhara dukkha.
Sankhara dukkha. And the role lopa plays in that. Pardon?
You're talking about viparinama, yeah. Dukkha for the second one, I think.
Okay, yes, I am.
Because of, especially referred to as pleasant feeling on account of lobha, yes. Viparinama dukkha.
Can you elaborate on that, talk about it a bit?
Do you like pleasant feeling? Do you like to have pleasant feeling? No?
No.
Pleasant feeling.
Oh, pleasant, I thought you said unpleasant. Yes, yes, I do.
Okay. Is that enough? Now?
Now, is
or
that
not
enough?
Not enough. Never enough.
Never enough, right. I want more and more.
Because it changes from one thing, one object to another object. It's a dukkha. Keep on changing,
yes.
Looking for.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. That's why the dukkha is the first thing. It's not as difficult to understand it,
right.
As dukkha. But the pleasant feeling to be dukkha,
pleasant visible object is not enough. One then wants pleasant experience through the taste door as well, or pleasant sounds.
Yes, on and on. On and on. And it's through understanding of realities and up to the point of, well, at the fourth vipassana jnana will be when the arising and falling away of jittas or of dhammas is known, and the truer sense of suffering is understood.
By then you understand what is meant by dukkha.
Yes.
Even that which arises and falls away, no matter pleasant or unpleasant feeling.
Right. I'm sorry, no one can?
No matter is what? Pleasant or unpleasant feeling?
Okay.
Object.
Right.
And you see that since the first dukkha is not much difficult, because anyone can understand, and one wants to get rid of it, right?
Yes.
But the second one, one cannot see its danger of dukkha, so mm-hmm. one crave for it. What is more dangerous, more dukkha? Mm-hmm. And the last one, no control.
Right, never control.
Ananda.
A good conventional example of the second one is when we want to have be relaxed, so we need a good place with good temperature, and then a bit of music, and then a nice drink or food or whatever. I mean, so many things just
yes.
in order, just right, in order to get that pleasant feeling.
Yes.
And then it doesn't last anyway. So after a while, one needs to change the order of things and the mix.
Yes, that part's pretty easy to understand. It's at the deeper level. I guess I'm talking about how the pleasant feeling promotes craving, promotes more and more desire for pleasant feeling, and in order to, and it's the only the understanding of realities that can help us understand and eventually when the sufficient banya arises interrupt that continuing chain. At some point, at the fourth stage of vipassana jnana, there is understanding of the rising and falling away of dhammas. So the and that before the arising and persisting of the dhamma, there is nothing. Then there is something,
right.
And then there is nothing again.
Right.
And in fact, in that something, there is no real substance, nothing worth grasping at.
But that's not the end of grasping.
Pardon?
But that is then not the end of grasping.
No, it continues on.
So
but until that is even known, it's there will be conditions, well... No.
Less and less.
Taking
yes. what is impermanent for permanent after mm-hmm. that point. Less and less of that kind of wrong idea. And less taking what is anatta for utter, but still taking what is actually foul. The pleasant feeling actually is foul. It's not
yes.
anything that's worth clinging to, but it's still taken for being something beautiful. And what is unsatisfactory is still taken for being satisfactory. Lobha continues clinging until the very until anagami to that sense object.
Okay, thank you.
So can we say that the Viparinama Dukkha is related to the fact that realities arise and fall away? Is it because of that that pleasant feeling is actually never satisfactory?
Because there's always clinging to pleasant feeling on account of what has actually fallen away, so it can never be satisfied even for a moment.
Well, all the aspects of dukkha are related to the fact that dhammas arise and fall away. So sankhara dukkha also.
What about the first one, the dukkha dukkha?
Well, also, I guess, if there's pleasant feeling, it doesn't last, replaced by painful feeling.
Usually when we talk about the three kinds of dukkha, we talk about the different feeling. The first one is dukkha, and pleasant feeling is dukkha dukkha. And the second one is the pleasant feeling, because one enjoy pleasant feeling, one would like to have more and more and more, but the pleasant feeling cannot stay at all. Nothing can stay. Whatever arises falls away. So the object of clinging falls away, and even the clinging to that object is ended, no more. So there is another lopa, wanting to have another one, another one, another one, never enough at all. Is that not dukkha? But one cannot see that because one tried to have it. But it's so dukkha if one still wants something to have pleasant feeling. So it's more difficult, it's harder to understand that. And the last one is the hardest, sankhara dukkha. Whatever pleasant or unpleasant, dukkha dukkha or viparinama dukkha, must be sankhara dukkha.
Can we say that the people who see the dangers of akusala and the five, the five sensual objects, kind of they can see the viparinama dukkha better than others?
Is there dukkha dukkha now?
Yes.
Yes.
Pain, yeah. At the
so
somewhere.
Is there viparinama dukkha now? See?
Still, yeah.
And what about sankhara dukkha? It's
also
now, but it's not,
yeah,
known. So for the indifferent feeling, it's harder to understand than dukkha and somanasa. Because now it does not appear, but when there is dukkha, it appears as dukkha. And when it's sukha, it appears as sukha, somanasa appear. But indifferent feeling does not usually appear. That's why it can be known by way of sankhara dukkha.
If there's reflection, wise reflection now on how useless it is to cling to pleasant feeling or any object that's fallen away instantly, for a moment there is a little more understanding of what viparinama dukkha is. So for those who really see the danger of clinging to sense objects, because if they really understand how fleeting pleasant feeling is and how it's not worthwhile and how it doesn't bring any calm, then there is more understanding, like now, even reflecting on it, how life is all about following pleasant feeling, like Jonathan said before, pleasant taste, then one wants pleasant music and so on. So a moment of reflection, then it is understood better and better. If one hasn't heard about it, one would have no idea. Most people just think of dukkha as being unpleasant bodily and mental feeling, and that's it. So it's a little more subtle. And then sankhara dukkha is more subtle too, really understanding the unsatisfactoriness of whatever arises and falls away.
So like jhana attainers, they can see the gross, like the gross side of pleasant feeling, so even like let go of pleasant feeling, but they cannot see the neutral feeling that is also actually unsatisfactory. Yeah.
They don't, if they haven't developed any insight, they don't understand the unsatisfactoriness of whatever arises and falls away, including jhana citta. Lob, have you been able to follow the discussion, or is it quite difficult for you?
Quite difficult for me.
Yes. Do you have any topic or anything you would like to ask about? Because if you ask your own questions at a basic level in your own English, then easier for you to follow.
Yes.
So anything you would like to hear about?
Not yet. Yeah. Thank you.
So when we are talking about different kinds of dukkha, do you understand what we're talking about?
I'm sorry?
When we're talking about different kinds of dukkha, do you know what dukkha is?
Yes.
Yes. When we talk about three kinds of dukkha, do you understand what we're talking about?
No.
Okay, so what do you know about dukkha? What is dukkha?
Dukkha is suffering.
Suffering. What is suffering?
What is suffering?
Can you give some examples of what suffering is?
Pain.
Pain.
Yes.
Okay, pain is one kind of suffering. Any other kinds of suffering?
Worry.
Worry, okay. So this is the first kind of suffering we're talking about. Pain and any kind of aversion like worry or fear or anger, because it arises with unpleasant feeling. So as Ajahn said, in brief we can say unpleasant feeling. This is dukkha, like, so this is what most people understand when we talk about suffering. If you ask most people in Vietnam what is suffering, they will say the same as you: pain, anger, unpleasant feeling.
Yeah.
So this is the first kind of dukkha. And the second kind of dukkha refers to how when attachment arises, like now, it looks for pleasant feeling or pleasant object. But, for example, a pleasant taste. But that pleasant taste doesn't last. And then it looks for something else. Maybe a pleasant sound, or it looks for a pleasant visible object. So always looking for something pleasant, but whatever it looks for
cannot last forever.
Cannot stay, and the pleasant and the lobha is always jumping, looking for another object, never satisfied, always wanting more and more. So this is the second kind of dukkha, which in brief we can say pleasant feeling, because of always looking for pleasant feeling.
Yes.
Okay? And then the third kind of dukkha can only be taught by the Buddha, and it refers to how whatever arises in life, seeing, hearing, thinking, falls away immediately. It doesn't stay at all. And no one can make it arise. You cannot choose what to experience now. You cannot make that seeing last for more than a moment. So whatever is conditioned arises and falls away, and therefore it's not satisfactory. It's dukkha. It's unsatisfactory. Usually we use unsatisfactory in English for dukkha rather than suffering, because we know the pain is suffering, but what about the hardness now, which falls away immediately, or the pleasant feeling, which falls away immediately? So whatever arises in life falls away immediately. And this is the deep meaning of dukkha, the arising and falling away of whatever is conditioned. This is sankhara dukkha, the third kind of dukkha.
Yes.
Does it make sense?
Yes. Yes.
Sarah, you just said that the third kind, sankhara dukkha, is the dukkha you can know only from hearing the Buddha's teachings. But I'm thinking, wouldn't that also be with the other two dukkha? It's only better understood after hearing the Buddha's teachings?
Better understood, but I think even people who've never heard the Buddha's teachings know that, like Lob said, that pain is suffering or not good thing, or that anger is not satisfactory or suffering. So I think this is commonly understood even without the Buddha's teaching. Of course, anything is more detailed and deeper when taught by the Buddha, but still this is common understanding. It doesn't need a Buddha to say that pain is suffering. Everyone knows that.
Hmm. But it's still taken as I.
It's still taken as I. So only the third kind, the sankhara dukkha, is the understanding of conditioned dharmas that are impermanent and anatta. As you say, it's deeper with the Buddha's teaching, because then there is the understanding that even that painful feeling, which is dukkha, is just a dharma, not my painful feeling in reality. So everything is deeper and deeper.
So how many dukkhas everyone knows now? How many? One? What's that?
Dukkha, dukkha. And that also not well enough, because it's still taken for I.
Even it's dukkha, no one knows if one doesn't hear the teachings of the Buddha. Mm-hmm. Is it very hard to understand the viparinama dukkha? And the hardest is sankhara dukkha.
I think the gist of Anne's comments were to the effect that viparinama dukkha is reduced, or no? You, when you were talking about the fourth vipassana jnana and so forth, I just wanted to pick up, because I'm not clear on the point myself. We know that for the arahat, there is still dukkha.
Even sotapanna and before that, vipassana jnana,
yes,
uttayapya jnana,
right,
experience the sankhara dukkha.
Yes.
Because of the arising and falling away of dhammas.
The arahat sees better than anyone that dhammas arise and fall away, so the arahat has a better understanding of that kind of dukkha than the non-arahat.
The for
best.
Sure.
The best, right.
Yes.
And for viparinama dukkha?
It depends on whether you heard about it or not. If you don't hear it about it at all, how can you know that any time there's pleasant feeling is dukkha? Because it's never enough.
Is that the case for the arahat also?
Before arahata.
Before arahata.
Yeah. Otherwise, what can support condition to have the direct awareness of reality right now?
The arahata is fully conversant with viparinama dukkha, because
no,
he has seen it and understood it.
No fantasy. It's fantasy when it's ignorance.
But he or she sees the dukkha aspect of
according
life.
To level of panya.
Yes. At all three levels.
For example, now it does mean that we don't have heard about the dukkha at all. Now seeing arises and falls away, one knows, but it does not appear as it is. So it's not the sharp and keen understanding which can letting go the idea of self little by little before it can be completely eradicated by Sotapanna.
Sorry, Ajahn, I missed that. Before what can be completely eradicated by Sotapanna?
First, Vipassana cannot eradicate the idea of self.
Right, cannot.
The other higher cannot until it's Sotapanna.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Sotapatimaka.
Sorry, I'm not sure if I can follow. So the first two type of the dukkha, can we say because of the attachment? Is, I mean, the dukkha we refer to the reality of the pleasant or unpleasant feeling or the attachment to that reality.
Painful bodily feeling is going to be painful whether or not there's attachment to it, isn't there?
Yeah. But the arahata also painful because of
still dukkha.
Okay.
The deepest. Because it still arises and falls away and it's still the object of clinging for others. So it's still dukkha.
So also similar to the pleasant feeling is the refer to the moment of the pleasant feeling, right? Or they are attached to the pleasant feeling.
Actually, we can just say, if we just go to the third kind of dukkha, that whatever arises and falls away, unpleasant feeling, pleasant feeling, whatever it is dukkha. And as we know, that the real cause of all kinds of dukkha in the ultimate sense is attachment and ignorance. If there's no more attachment and ignorance, no birth, no arising of any dharma, no dukkha at all.
The ultimate meaning of the dukkha. Okay.
Is dukkha dukkha sankhara dukkha?
Yes.
But it cannot be known as sankhara dukkha yet now.
Yeah.
And is the viparinama dukkha also sankhara dukkha? It's harder to know.
Yeah.
Considering. So all dhammas are sankhara dukkha.
Yeah. Okay.
And even those dhammas of the Buddha, the rupas of the Buddha's body, for example, they are still sankhara dhammas, so they are still dukkha, unsatisfactory, not worth clinging to. So whatever is conditioned. So that's why, in brief, all khandhas are dukkha.
Dukkha, dukkha is not the object for craving for everyone, right? But the second one, viparinama, is not dukkha. For those who do not know the way it is, unstable, not just for one object only, but clinging arises and falls away non-stop, never stop, changing objects all the time. See? So is it hard to understand that, even right now? Changing from this plate of food to another plate, another dish, all the time. Is that not dukkha? Or one enjoy choosing, selecting, having different food, different plates, different dishes. So that's why if Buddha didn't say about this, who knows that it has to develop stage by stage. Because it's so very difficult not to want to have pleasant feeling. So when there is more understanding about sankhara dukkha, then it can see that even sukha, pleasant feeling, is not permanent. It changes, different from the way dukkha is, because it's object of desire, attachment. But to have not enough at all, more and more and more, that is dukkha.
Sankhara dukkha is also dukkha because, as I understand it, not because it can and is clung to, but also because it is not a refuge of any kind.
So even upekkha vedana, indifferent feeling, is sankhara dukkha. Everything comes to be sankhara dukkha.
Whereas I understand from what you say that the parinama dukkha is only dukkha.
As it's not seen as not permanent yet. Hmm. It can be seen as should we have not enough lopa from time to time. Is it dukkha? But when one feels enough, santati, that is better than not enough. But it's still sankhara dukkha, which is not unseen, not experienced yet. So the dukkha has to be understood stage by stage. Is that sankhara dukkha or what dukkha?
There is, but not yet known.
And also, you want for something.
And also, sankhara dukkha.
So, can we say any realities by arise and falling away by condition? Dukkha. Okay.
As soon as you have finished drinking, you look for other things.
Even moving, just on seat.
To have.
Looking here, looking there, viparinama dukkha. Even looking here, it's so beautiful, like flowers, but it's not satisfactory, so we look at another object.
So much is enough.
Never enough.
So much is enough of that object, then time for another object.
Right, right.
And that's the viparinama dukkha.
Is it beautiful to know that?
Yes.
Adding to ignorance. Difference.